Welcome to Mayor Byrne's podcast on the power of showing up, a path to leadership.
Thanks for having me back. This is quite the deep dive we have today.
It really is. Yeah. I mean, imagine living in this world-famous, incredibly wealthy town that has somehow gone over a century without standardized street addresses.
Which is just wild to think about.
Right. And then imagine a place where, right during the height of a global crisis, the government machinery is so paralyzed that citizens are literally being arrested just for walking on the beach.
Yeah, just walking outside.
Exactly. So today, for our deep dive, we're looking at the person who stepped in to untangle that paralysis. And the real twist here is that he wasn't a seasoned politician. He wasn't a lawyer or some, you know, lifelong bureaucrat.
No, not at all.
He was a retired software guy in a yellow volunteer safety vest.
Yeah, and the source material we're examining today is a deeply personal speech given by that guy, Dale Byrne, the mayor of Carmel by the Sea. He gave this to students at the Panetta Institute.
And the mission of our deep dive today is to really unpack this counterintuitive path to leadership he outlines, right?
Exactly. Because the overarching theme he presents to these students is that, well, the world doesn't actually have a shortage of smart, capable people.
Right.
What it suffers from is this massive shortage of people willing to act before they feel perfectly ready, or, you know, before they have the quote-unquote official credentials to solve a problem.
Which I think speaks directly to anyone listening to this right now. You know, you might be looking at the state of your own community or your school and thinking, someone should really fix that, but I'm not the right person.
Right, waiting for the adults in the room.
Yes. But Dale's background is the absolute antithesis of that career politician who's just waiting for the right moment. It's almost like the butterfly effect, but for local civics. One simple yes at a local visitor center eventually compounds into running an entire city.
It really is. And he's profoundly humble about his journey, too. I mean, he flat out tells the students he never had a grand master plan to become a mayor. He didn't intend to become mayor at all.
Yeah, he was the first person in his family to even get a college degree, right? A BS and an MBA from USC.
That's right. And his entire professional life was firmly rooted in the private sector. He spent decades building software companies, building homes, and even running a horse business.
Horse business.
Yeah. I mean, this is a person who logged 6 million miles traveling for his companies. He was fundamentally a businessman wired to identify inefficiencies and just fix them.
And his prior community involvement was incredibly quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Like the kind of private, unglamorous stuff millions of people do every weekend, serving on a church committee or refereeing kids' soccer, which, by the way, he jokes was the absolute hardest thing he ever did.
Oh, I believe it. Parents are intense.
Totally. He also coached Little League. But, and I really want to highlight this crucial detail from the sources, the Little League coaching was 40 years ago, and it was down in Redondo Beach, not in Carmel.
Yeah, placing that timeline and geography in context is vital. It proves he wasn't spending decades, you know, grooming a political base or glad-handing in the town he would eventually run.
Right. He wasn't plotting a mayoral run while handing out orange slices.
Exactly. When he and his wife Margaret moved to Carmel full-time 10 years ago, he was fully retired. They had built 5 homes in 9 years, and they were ready to just, well, enjoy the quiet coastal life they'd earned. There was zero ulterior motive.
But instead of just kicking back on the beach, he started saying yes to these incredibly small, seemingly random things. Like the Chamber of Commerce Visitor Center just needed help welcoming people. He says yes, and suddenly he's creating 12 voice map audio tours covering everything from Big Sur to Santa Cruz.
Which is not a small task.
No. Let me pause there, because VoiceMap isn't just handing out paper brochures. It's a platform for GPS-triggered audio storytelling. You actually have to organize historical information, map out coordinates, and, like, design a user experience for tourists walking around the city.
Right. It requires taking a fragmented, messy set of information and building a structured, accessible system out of it. And you see that exact same instinct when he and Margaret get involved with the Carmel Residents Association.
What did he do there?
Well, he didn't just attend meetings. He evaluated their operational bottlenecks. He brought in a new tech platform to streamline their communications, launched a discount card, wrote columns, and literally doubled their membership in a single year.
Okay, but let me push back on this narrative a bit, because it's a great story of a proactive retiree, sure. But we are talking about the skills required to run a municipal government.
Fair point.
Dale mentions his first leadership role was managing a foster's freeze at 15 and a half years old. How does handing out soft serve or setting up GPS audio tours for tourists actually translate to managing millions of dollars in taxpayer funds and steering city policy?
That is the big question. And the translation happens in the psychological shift rather than the specific task itself.
What do you mean?
Leadership is a muscle, right? And you build it through the habit of solving problems regardless of the scale. When you step into rooms where you don't quite belong yet, and you volunteer to fix a broken database or organize a walking tour, you're learning how to marshal resources.
You learn
how to identify where a system is failing, how to communicate a new vision to volunteers, and how to execute a project from start to finish. Those underlying mechanics of execution, they're universal, whether you're running a fast food shift or a city council meeting.
So the audio tours and the tech platforms were essentially reps in a leadership gym.
Exactly. Every time he stepped into a space and offered a solution, he was unknowingly building a network. He was interacting with business owners, residents, local organizers, proving he was someone who actually delivered on his promises.
And I guess that ground level credibility is what perfectly primed him for the crucible moment of his community.
Yeah.
Because when the COVID-19 pandemic hit, it created this unprecedented vacuum of leadership everywhere.
It really did.
The pandemic shuts down the city, and the official government machinery is practically paralyzed. Like we mentioned earlier, the city was literally arresting people for walking on the beach.
Which is just crazy to look back on.
Yeah, the bureaucratic response was entirely punitive and reactive. But Dale and Margaret's response was to ask the city, can we help? They co-founded this grassroots organization called Carmel Cares with the mission of keeping the town beautiful, safe, and inviting.
And the scale of what Carmel Cares became is staggering. It grew to over 300 volunteers, logging 50,000 hours of service.
50,000 hours? That's incredible.
Yeah. Organizing 300 panicked, isolated people into a cohesive workforce requires immense logistical skill. But the true genius of Carmel Cares wasn't just about picking up trash or maintaining public spaces. It was actually a psychological intervention for the community.
How so?
Well, during one of the most disorienting periods in modern history, Dale gave Adrift people purpose.
He gave them somewhere to be, right?
Yeah.
A community to work alongside when the rest of the world was telling them to lock their doors and hide.
Exactly.
He was essentially running a scrappy, highly motivated tech startup right in the shadow of this slow, bureaucratic monolith. They were rapidly shipping solutions to public spaces. And he didn't stop at physical volunteering either.
No, he didn't. Simultaneously, he and his partner, Tim Allen, launched Carmel Gives, which they structured as a donor-advised fund.
Can you explain what that is for the listeners?
Sure. A donor-advised fund is essentially a philanthropic vehicle. It allows donors to make a charitable contribution, receive an immediate tax deduction, and then recommend grants from the fund over time.
Okay.
Normally, setting up a private foundation takes months of legal red tape. But a donor-advised fund can be established really quickly under an existing public charity. This allows for incredibly fast deployment of capital. And in a crisis where local businesses are days away from bankruptcy, that speed is everything. So they use that speed to engineer these brilliant win-win-win economic scenarios. Like, they push $300,000 in grants to 20 local restaurants.
Right.
That's win number one, injecting cash directly into the restaurants to keep them afloat and keep their staff employed. Instead of putting those workers on unemployment, they kept them working.
Exactly.
Then those restaurants produced 16,000 meals, which Dale personally helped deliver to 20 local nonprofits and individuals in need. So that's win number two, feeding vulnerable populations.
And the underlying economic mechanics of that initiative are vital to understand. By keeping the restaurant staff employed, you maintain the velocity of money within a closed local ecosystem.
Because they keep spending money in town.
Exactly. Those employees continue paying rent and buying groceries in town. Furthermore, it preserves the supply chain. If a restaurant closes for 6 months, their local farmers and suppliers also go under. By buying 16,000 meals, Carmel Gives kept the entire local economic engine turning.
And they added a third win. They used the Carmel Chamber of Commerce to pass the funds through to the restaurants. Processing those grants generated enough administrative revenue for the chamber to replace their canceled annual fundraiser.
Wow.
Yeah, it literally kept the Chamber of Commerce in business. They saved the restaurants, fed the hungry, and rescued the local business advocate all in one elegant maneuver.
It's brilliant. In his address to the students, Dale refers to this era of intense volunteerism as resume building in disguise.
Well, I like that phrase.
Right. When the pandemic arrived, there was no election. There was no job posting for a crisis manager. He simply stepped into the vacuum. And by doing so, the community watched him navigate complex logistics and solve life-or-death economic problems.
You can't manufacture that kind of credibility through a traditional political campaign.
You really can't. So when he eventually decided to run for mayor, he wasn't a stranger knocking on doors asking for a favor. He was the guy in the yellow volunteer safety vest who had already been doing the work for years.
He proved his competence outside the system, which gave the voters complete confidence in what he could do inside the system.
Because his motives were entirely transparent. He was a retired person who just wanted his town to survive. Which leads directly to this philosophical question Dale poses to the Panetta Institute students. Why invest all this energy into a one-square-mile town of 3,000 people?
Yeah, because Carmel operates on a weak mayor system, right? Meaning the mayor doesn't have sweeping executive authority. The power rests largely with the city council.
Exactly. And the issues are often hyper-local: sidewalk maintenance, parking, zoning. When you look at the massive existential global problems dominating the news, local civics can seem incredibly small.
But his answer to that skepticism is all about the power of feedback loops. He tells the students that, you know, you can take your idealism to Washington, D.C., embed yourself in a massive federal institution, and spend a decade drafting policy. But the machinery at that level is so invisible and slow that you may never actually know if your work helped a single human being. You lose the thread of impact.
But in local government, the feedback loop is immediate. It's tactile and highly visible.
You can literally see it.
Right. You propose a solution to a dangerous intersection on Tuesday. The council debates it on Wednesday. It passes. And by Friday, you are physically driving past the new stop signs. You are forced to deal with reality, not abstract political theory, because the results of your decisions were sitting right outside your front door.
And looking at his speech, the sheer volume of what they tackled is staggering. And what stands out immediately to me is his language. He never says, I fixed this or I achieved that. He consistently frames every victory around the team.
Always.
He explicitly tells the students, we passed a $41 million budget that freed up $6 million for deferred maintenance, preventing a fiscal cliff. He made sure to use the word we.
And deferred maintenance is one of the most insidious threats to any municipality. It represents the quiet decay of infrastructure, crumbling sewer pipes, failing retaining walls, outdated electrical grids.
The stuff nobody wants to pay for.
Exactly. Past administrations often ignore these issues because fixing underground pipes doesn't win elections. It's expensive and it's invisible. So freeing up $6 million to address these root-level problems is a massive logistical achievement that secures the town's future.
He also highlights that we finally gave Carmel regular street addresses for the first time in over 100 years. Just let that sink in. For a century, if you lived in Carmel, you didn't have a standard house number.
Which sounds charming until there's an emergency.
Exactly. It sounds quaint until you realize the nightmare it causes for emergency medical services trying to find a heart attack victim.
Yeah.
Or just the daily chaos for package deliveries. Fixing a century-old quirk requires overcoming immense institutional inertia.
It requires navigating deep-seated local resistance to change. The council also achieved unanimous votes on ballot measures for new taxes, which is incredibly rare.
Yeah, nobody wants higher taxes.
Right. You only get residents to vote to tax themselves if they have absolute ironclad trust in the people managing the budget.
And again, he says, we shepherded those ballot measures. We got a $17 million historic library restoration back on track after years of paralysis. And perhaps my favorite example of local passions, we banned pickleball from Forest Hill Park.
Oh, the pickleball saga.
That decision somehow became an international news story.
But it perfectly encapsulates the intensity of local government, right? The noise and disruption of a sports court might seem trivial from a national perspective, but to the residents living 50 feet away, it is the single most important issue affecting their daily peace and property values.
It's their whole world.
Exactly. Local leadership means standing in the room, looking your neighbors in the eye, and making a definitive ruling on something they are fiercely passionate about.
It sounds incredibly satisfying, honestly, to literally drive through town and see the direct results of that work. But Dale is very clear with the students that this visible impact comes with a heavy price.
It definitely does.
You have to grow what he calls rhinoceros skin. Even after dedicating 50,000 volunteer hours and successfully steering the town through a pandemic, he still receives angry letters to the editor claiming, you know, no one asked you to do this. Our town was just fine.
Yeah, you cannot please everyone, especially in a small town where every decision feels personal to the residents. But you push through that localized criticism because the reward is the tangible improvement to the safety, finances, and daily lives of your neighbors. You learn the intricate block-by-block mechanics of how human communities actually function and sustain themselves.
Which brings us to a really grounding fact about his tenure. He points out that the mayor term is only 2 years, and he is leaving office this December after the election. He's in clinking to the seat or trying to parlay this into a run for state senate.
No, it's a temporary post, but it's part of a lifelong mission of civic engagement.
He tells the audience he is happily returning to his yellow safety vest. He's going back to focusing on his nonprofits, growing the CARES volunteer groups into surrounding cities, and starting a massive new initiative to put power lines underground throughout the Monterey Peninsula.
He actually wore his volunteer vest and hat right there on the stage while giving the speech.
I love that.
It's such a physical reminder of where his authority actually comes from, and the setting of this speech adds a profound layer to his message.
At the Panetta Institute.
Right. Founded by Secretary Leon Panetta. For those who might not know, Leon Panetta served as the director of the CIA, the Secretary of Defense, and the White House Chief of Staff. I mean, he operated at the absolute zenith of global power.
Doesn't get much higher than that.
No, it doesn't. Yet Panetta built his entire foundation in local and regional public life in Monterey County. Dale draws a brilliant parallel here. The ground-level work of fixing local problems is the exact same mechanism that builds the credibility to eventually do extraordinary things on a national scale.
And that is the core inspirational message for you listening right now, particularly if you are a student or someone eager to make an impact. You do not need a title to start.
You really don't.
You don't need an election. You don't need a law degree or a formal job posting. You just need to find something in your school, your neighborhood, or your town that bothers you enough to fix it.
You start by saying yes to the unglamorous tasks, because the most meaningful civic work doesn't happen in the halls of Congress. It happens in your local community center, your town hall, and on your own street.
So do not underestimate what a small place can teach you about how the world actually works. Say yes before you feel ready and show up when things are at their absolute hardest.
So I'll leave you with this final thought to mull over. Think about your own neighborhood or your own school. What is the one invisible problem that everyone constantly complains about, but absolutely no one is stepping up to fix? What would happen if you stopped waiting for some credentialed expert to swoop in, put on your own metaphorical yellow safety vest, and just said yes to solving it today?
Thanks for listening to Mayor Burns' podcast. You can see all of his columns and speeches and get a copy of the speech this was generated from at jadaforcarmelmayor.com.